We've considered animating another photograph, but it's too hard on Bridger. When they're grown and ready, then we can try more. He nodded. What did Emma remember? Was it their real life or an imaginary one? I couldn't confirm. They remembered a whole lifetime up to death, but not a very traceable life. It was a very early photograph from when unfamous people left few records, women more so. I found documents pointing to a couple different people who could have been our Emma Plotz, but there wasn't much to trace. Do you still have the photograph? Of course, but the miracle's worn off. The daylight in the room isn't changing anymore. It wears off? Yes, Mem. I caught myself. Carlyle. For inanimate objects, it's permanent. But it seems life is a special kind of miracle that doesn't last so long. Bridger has to re-miracle the soldiers every month or so, and Boo. Life is a special kind of miracle, he repeated, half-whispered like a prayer. I nodded. That's why Bridger can't just raise the dead. Carlyle froze. Right, right. He paused. You and I cannot read minds, reader, but we both know the torrent of possibilities which were multiplying in Carlyle from that thought. Did Emma Plotz... No, it wouldn't help. Did Emma Plotz what? I caught a tremor in his lips. Did Emma Plotz remember the afterlife? I felt my heart thrill at the question, too, a censer's question. No, but Poynter may tomorrow, when Bridger brings them back. Pale skin went paler. You've decided, then? To bring them back? Not yet, but Bridger will feel sad and guilty every day forever if they don't do it. Could you resist day in, day out, if you could resurrect a friend? No. No, I couldn't. No one could. I did not correct him. I waited for more questions, but four breaths passed and Carlyle was still mulling on the afterlife, fidgeting with his hair and watching me hazily as I crawled across the floor. I watched him in return. The curve of his little chin, the fierce blue of his eyes, almost unnatural. Many would say it is unnatural, since his mother's perfection had been handcrafted trait by trait from the finest chromosomes French ancestry offered. But Aristotle, the philosopher, reminds us that man is an animal, a part of nature just as much as fruit and vine. So Danae's two blue eyes, two practiced gestures, even her lotus blossom tower of glass and steel, are all as natural as a peacock's plumes or beaver dams. Why were you given this assignment? I asked at last. Carlyle was still staring more through me than at me. That is the question. Nothing could have endeared the cousin to me more. He thought I meant it metaphysically, that I meant to ask what fate, what hand, what meddling spirit or inexorable clockmaker had placed him in Bridger's path. That's all he thought of. Even after Eureka's questioning, it didn't occur to him that I was suspicious of his assignment, that I smelled a rat behind this green young cousin who had been granted access to this most private humanist bosh. If there was a motive, some enemy of the humanists or of Ando and Danae moving in the dark, this sweet, sincere, true vocateur sensei didn't know. When you started to doubt it was real, I began softly, was it because you thought it was impossible? Or was it because it's something you've always wanted to be true so badly that now that it is true, you're worried you just deceived yourself into believing? Something in the question made him hide behind his hair. I've never wished to bring toys to life. Miracle. That is what you're thinking. I know it is. You said you weren't afraid of the word miracle. You know I can't discuss too deeply. You can. This isn't a session, member, Carlyle. You're not my sensei. I have a court-appointed sensei. If this isn't a session, it's borderline illegal. I rose. Some things should not be said while on one's knees. It's a law we have to break. I met his gaze and held it. We have to. In the name of science, reason, all humanity. Something is happening with Bridger. Something real, magical, metaphysical. We have to discuss it, test it. We have to figure out what to do. It could be the most important thing that's ever happened. Or things like this could have happened 100,000 times throughout history, but there's some deeper reason history hid them all. This isn't a question of us risking disrupting world peace by spreading some cult belief. This is a question of uncovering the deep truth about the provable reality humanity lives in, and someday sharing that. I want to say that Carlyle paused to steel himself. But his movements were all the signatures of weakness, huddling, hugging himself within the encircling looseness of his cousin's wrap, like a child amid the covers. But I think, in his gentle way, that was his steel. I could say many cults have thought the same. But you're right. The potential is too great. The immediate human applications, if we can understand this power. We can't investigate it fully without talking about the theological end as well. He took a deep breath. And, on that note, I've been thinking, is it really right to wait and not show Bridger to anyone until they're an adult? What if something happens in the meantime? What if Bridger falls and breaks their neck? All that potential gone. And even without that, there's all the good this power could do that isn't being done in the meantime. Not raising the dead, necessarily. That has a lot of other implications we have to look at, but smaller things. Bridger could cure stereococcus. We have. What? I had Bridger make a cure 18 months ago, and sent it anonymously to Pelly Chemical. Testing is underway. You did? Remember 3 years ago when they found a treatment for Waldvogel's vein? That was Bridger too. He swallowed. But Bridger can do more than just cure one disease. That healing potion can make wounds vanish instantly. And if something like that turned up anonymously on a lab's doorstep, all the king's horses and all the king's men wouldn't rest until they'd traced it. We've tried to test it, but the potion transformed the microscope itself. It's beyond current science. Or at least beyond equipment we can get at without leaving a paper trail. Hopefully science will explain it someday, even reproduce it, but they won't learn to really understand it without access to the source. For that, Bridger needs to be ready to face becoming the center of all the hope and envy of the world. And before that can happen, they need to learn to talk to strangers. Carlyle nodded, but there was still an edge of huddle in his poise. But every day, I stood my ground, moral calculus like that will drive you crazy. The people who die today or tomorrow because they don't have Bridger's potions aren't on your conscience any more than the people who died yesterday or 1,000 years ago. We're doing what we can with Bridger. We're on the edge now of moving from baby steps to real steps. You're the first real step. If you do well, the second may come soon. That's all anyone could ask. He smiled. Yes, you're right. And I can do it well. I know I can. The growl of his angry stomach cut him off. I laughed aloud. You forgot to feed yourself today, didn't you? I guess I did. There's a lunchbox on the table, I offered. Good and fresh. Eat. Thank you. He took it, and had started on the dainty knot before he realized. Wait, this... I can't take food from a servicer. You earned this. I'm supposed to feed you. I almost snickered. Bridger can make filet mignon out of cardboard. I'm not going to go hungry. He returned my smile. Thank you. Of course. I mumbled it, distracted by remembering whose delicate fingers prepared that plump little lunch that fate and I had placed in the gag jean's hands. I mean, you're welcome. It's the least I can offer after I tackled you before. Thank you for not reporting me. Carlyle's smile grew richer. You've offered a lot more than that. You did this very well, very gently. You answered a lot and pushed me when I needed to be pushed. You're right that we have to talk about this, about what we think it means, that we have to use words like miracle, metaphysics, fate, as well as magic and phenomenon. But you haven't pushed me to actually do it yet. I knelt once more to my work. It's easy to tell you're the one who's exhausted. True enough, he chuckled at himself. Were you a sensei? This was an unexpected stroke. Carlyle has absorbed a little of that art of cutting to the quick which the current conclave teaches, but in him it is usually stifled by natural gentleness. I realize, reader, that I should apologize for my confusing language, since if my he and she mean anything, then certainly this sweet and gentle cousin in her flowing wrap should be she. In this case, alas, I am commanded by an outside power to give Carlyle the masculine, to remind you that this long-lost scion is a prince, not princess, a fact which matters in the eyes of some and of the law. But I shall do my best to remind you often that a cousin's maternal heart beats beneath Carlyle's broad chest, and I promise, reader, to be consistent in making other cousins she. No, I was never a sensei or anything, I answered. I committed my crimes too young. Pity touched his kind, too keen blue eyes, willing to forgive any convict, however great our unknown crimes. Would you have been one? You have that feel when you talk. I don't know. I never thought that far ahead. But if I were a sensei, and if this were a session, I think I would say now that you've had enough new revelations for one day, and that you should take that lunchbox home to rest and digest. All the universe and Bridger will still be here tomorrow, as will I. This may be the highest compliment Carlyle can pay. You would have made a good one. Here ends the first day of this history. Chapter the Sixth. Rome was not built in a day. But it was built in a year, as the new saying goes. Roma Nova, a sparkling sea of marble and bright bronze, built up from nothing in 300 days to be the capital of our new world of hives. In 2198, Emperor Agrippa Mason was tasked to choose a plan for the Alliance capital. Among the endless submissions of grand grids and lavish spectacle cities, an unofficial entry surfaced, number 40½, containing nothing but a cheap tourist's poster of ancient Rome, which had been slipped into the mix by a bold young secretary named Mycroft Ragbinder, or Frustanixor, to give a mason's name its rightful Latin. The smart aleck even labeled the ancient buildings with suggested modern counterparts. The Alliance Senate in the Senate House, the Supreme Polylaw Court in the Basilica Julia, the Sensei's Conclave in the House of the Vestal Virgins. Agrippa Mason saw genius in the plan, a message to the world that, despite how tattered war had left the continents, this age of honeybees could build as easily as raise a tent the capital of capitals, whose legend had named every capital to follow. This would not be the simple reconstruction of Rome as she had stood before the Church War, though that too Agrippa Mason undertook. This was greatness ex nihilo, to raise from nothing on some blank corner of the earth the city of marble as she had stood when she had ruled the first empire to need no name beyond the empire. The evening the Alliance accepted Mason's plan, the Emperor wrote to his oldest Bossib that he expected, if he raised this young Mycroft Frustanixor to his full potential, Then, as with Philip and Alexander, Agrippa's name would endure in history only in the tales of his successor.